Welcome to Reflections and Wonders, Revisiting Luke's Gospel, a podcast that's just me wondering off the top of my head about Luke's Gospel for the second time in 3 years. My name is Norm Seelye, and I'm a minister at Jubilee United Church in Toronto, Canada. I've been a minister for over 30 years, and every year my thoughts and wonderings change. So, Monday to Friday, I'll be reading my way through Luke, even though I read through Luke in 2021. But the thing is, the world's changed. I've changed, and so I expect that my wonderings will have changed as well. I don't have notes, and I haven't checked back to see what I said 3 years ago, but I am kind of looking forward to hearing what I say now. Or more importantly, what I think God may be saying to me now. I do want to thank Drew Winters for the music and you for joining me. I will do my best to keep my wanderings between 18 and 30 minutes, but every once in a while we may go a couple minutes long. You should also know that this is an audio version of a video blog that I will have recorded 2 weeks ago. So, if you want to see what I look like when I'm wandering, well, you can find me on my YouTube channel. Just search Norm Seelye. That's Norm Seelye, S-E-L-I. Or even easier, find me on the Jubilee United Church website, www.jubileeunited.ca. And if you want to support this and other digital ministries of Jubilee United Church, well, you can make a donation through canadahelps.org. We are Jubilee United Church, the one in Ontario. So now, let's see what Luke has to say this time around. And today it's Luke chapter 12, verses 49 to 59, which will finish the chapter. Yesterday we heard, well, in a variety of ways, that that we have a responsibility as people of faith. When you know, you have a greater responsibility than when you don't know. And that we can't really take our faith for granted, treat people poorly, or assume that God is not near. Basically, that's kind of where we came out of it, yes, at least that's where I came out of it after wondering about some of the words of Jesus and parables and images that he used. Jesus is still talking and is going to sort of wrap up this part of the lecture, as it were. So here it is. It's Luke 12, verses 49 to 59. Jesus said, "I came to bring fire to the earth, and how I wish it were already kindled. I have a baptism with which to be baptized, and what stress I'm under until it's completed. Do you think that I have come to bring peace to the earth? No, I tell you, but rather division. From now on, 5 in one household will be divided, 3 against 2 and 2 against 3. They will be divided, father against son and son against father, mother against daughter and daughter against mother, mother-in-law against daughter-in-law and daughter-in-law against mother-in-law." He also said to the crowds, "When you see a cloud rising in the west, you immediately say, 'It's going to rain.' And so it happens. When you see the south wind blowing, you say, 'There will be scorching heat,' and it happens. Well, you hypocrites, you know how to interpret the appearance of the earth and sky, but why do you not know how to interpret the present time? And why do you not judge for yourselves what is right? Thus, when you go with your accuser before a magistrate, on the way, make an effort to settle the case. Or you may be dragged before the judge, and the judge hand you over to the officer, and the officer throw you into prison. And I tell you, you will never get out until you have paid every last penny." So there we go. I think everything is pretty much right there for us. There are some who might wonder whether there's some special symbolism to this idea of the division, father against son, son against father, mother against daughter, daughter against mother, mother-in-law against daughter-in-law, daughter-in-law against mother-in-law. Why can't we have an argument about son against mother or daughter against father? I don't think there's any big symbolism there. I think we're just talking about relationships that people recognized. I don't think it's meant to be exhaustive as much as it's meant to be comprehensive. Just this idea that there is division, and I know a lot of people really struggle with this, you know, Jesus saying, I have come to bring fire to the earth, and how I wish it were already burning, already kindled. You think I've come to bring peace to the earth? No, division. And we hear that, go, well, no, wait a minute. No, we believe in peace. It should be peace. But I don't think Jesus is talking about a binary peace versus war. I don't think that Jesus is saying that I will have Father warring against Son. Son despising Father. It doesn't say that. It says there'll be division against. And so what I saw in this is all generational, right? Father against son against father, mother against daughter against mother, mother-in-law, daughter-in-law, mother-in-law. This idea that each generation will be in tension with the other generation. And that's okay. At least when I read it that way, well, yeah, of course that's true. I don't want to be my father. You know, and my none of my sons want to be me. I have an impact on them. And I had an impact on my father, and my father has an impact on me. And we have relationship, but that relationship is not that we are all the same. In fact, that relationship is healthiest when we learn from each other. I go to spend a day with my parents. If I don't learn something from my father, then I'm really just, I don't know, tolerating him, or I am spending time with him out of obligation. And if he doesn't learn something from me or listen to me or engage with me, then again, it's obligation, it's toleration, it's not a real relationship. And I am proud to say that I do learn from my father and from my mother, and I think that they learn from me. I definitely learn from my sons. I hope that they learn from me, and based on some of the things they say, yes, they do. We're not at war with each other, but we have been freed up from the idea that we must agree. And to me, that's part of what Jesus is saying. I've come to bring fire. Fire is destructive. Yes, it is. Fire also burns away that which is no longer necessary. Right? I mean, that's how you smelt to get to the metal, to the ore, to the good stuff. Right? You smelt away all the other stuff, so you're left with the nickel, the copper, whatever. That is what happens that clears a forest. Not that I'd want to go around setting fires. But you know, it's part of the natural thing. So this idea that, no, we got to burn away some of the old to allow the new to grow. And not only that, but the old also has to be open to the new so that the growth is for everybody and you don't just have to be burned away. In the context of the faith of Jesus' time, I can hear this relating to that organized temple-based Jewish faith of the first century in Jerusalem. It's not that it's a bad faith, but it has stopped to learn from it stopped learning from the young, and in fact it's insisting that the young conform without any sense of why. And that happens after a while. Again, when you have 613 commandments, but it's true in our families too. When you have a series of rules, rituals, habits, and you just do them, and you get to the point where someone says, well, why are we doing that? You go, just because we've always done it that way. Always done it that way isn't reason enough. Not only is it not reason enough to do it that way, but it's a disservice to people who are doing it because there was a reason you once did it. An example that I often bring up, I was part of a committee within my church, and that committee would meet Thursday mornings, 10:30 a.m. Always, Thursday mornings, 10:30 a.m. That's when they met. And no reason, I didn't know why we were meeting Thursdays at 10:30 a.m., but we did. Then there was a discussion about, well, why can't we get new people to join the committee? So, well, new people joining the committee, what do you mean new people to join the committee? Well, you know, there's some younger people here in the church, and they're not available Thursdays at 10:30. What about if we move the meeting time? Oh, no, we can't move the meeting time. Why can't we? Well, because we've always met then. And then I discovered we met at that time because two members of that committee, who were a husband and wife, needed to meet Thursday mornings at 10:30 so they could leave by 11:30 and pick up their granddaughter at school and get her lunch and then get her back to school for 1 o'clock. That's why we did it. We met to accommodate those two who were very important to our committee. They weren't on the committee anymore. But we were still doing that thing because we'd always done it that way. So in an effort to do this thing that once accommodated some people, we were still doing it, and it was not making it possible for new people to join the committee because there were people who had jobs on Thursdays or other obligations, and they couldn't manage it. So it's just... it's ridiculous. And to me, that's the very thing that Jesus is talking about. Saying, no. Like, sometimes you've got to stop doing things that you've always done and reconnect to why you're doing it. So the reason we met at 10:30 was to make accommodations so that we could have people involved. Oh, that's a great idea. You know what? Who else could we accommodate? How else could we make our meeting accessible? Is there somebody who would come to our meeting but they can't because the time isn't appropriate or the room we meet in is not accessible or the, like, you know, it, all of those things. It's like that philosophy that led to that Thursday 10:30 a.m. might lead us to having a Zoom meeting on Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Still trying to be accessible to everybody, making sure we got to have important voices involved, right? But we'd forgotten the reason for it. So to me, that's what we're talking about here. And the only way you get at that is if you stop conforming. If you actually stop and go, wait a minute, why are we doing this? And we risk being in conflict. And when people hear conflict, they hear aggressive conflict. They hear about anger and dissolution, and then pretty soon we're at war. But it's not that. Conflict means I have an opinion, a perspective. You have an opinion, a perspective. We might have differing wisdom. We're in conflict, but we together creatively can find the solution that makes me happy, makes you happy, or makes me not so happy right now. But that's okay, because later on you may want to make a concession to me that's going to make this thing work. And together, organically, we do something, not because we agreed, but because we were initially in conflict, but we were committed to making it work. So, father against son is a very good thing. My father and I are against each other. We don't agree with each other. And I don't want to be in a situation where I go to visit my father and I just always nod and go, oh yeah, no, that, yeah, uh-huh, yeah, I got it. No. There's no vitality in that. So this idea that we can break away from the past, that we can be in tension with different generations, that to me is what Jesus is doing in those words. That's what I hear in it. And it was already happening. So when we get to the second part, he says, you see a cloud rising in the west, and you say it's going to rain. And it's going, like, you know how to read the weather, but come on, you know what's going on here. You know you don't agree with your mother, and yet you never say anything. Come on, you hypocrite. You're supposed to have a real relationship. You know that what's going on at the church isn't what you want, but you're not saying anything. You just sort of conform. I spoke with a woman recently who has just begun to come to our church. After not going to church for about 5 years, she belonged to another church, and she felt she no longer fit in at that church. They didn't tell her she didn't fit in. She felt it. And by the way, understanding the story, I get why she felt that. But rather than saying to the church, I have an issue with this, or this is who I am, is there room for me here, or can I be, like, rather than that, she just pulled out and didn't go anywhere. She left the practice of her faith, and she longed for it. She missed it for over 5 years until she all but stumbled into our community and is so glad to be back into community. And I think, oh, what a sad loss. You know your faith is important to you, but you shut yourself out from it. You know there's something not quite right, but rather than identify it, you withdraw. That's the kind of hypocrisy I think that we're talking about here. It's not the hypocrisy where I have to demean you or you know, refuse to vote for you or whatever that is. It's the hypocrisy in the sense like, well, no, my faith's important to me, but I'm going to withdraw from it. Wow, why? Why? I can feel that I'm in tension now with the elders in my church, or I'm in tension, so I'm going to withdraw. Oh, you hypocrite. You see the signs, you know the tensions, that's okay. Talk about it, recognize it. I think Jesus is also very specifically saying, you can feel there's a revolution going on right here, a spiritual revolution. The way that Jesus is inviting people into is there. It does make sense. It does very much connect with the Abrahamic faith, with their Jewish faith. It does connect. But you refuse to see it because you don't want to create any tension. So you're just going to go along to get along until you stop going along at all. Oh, such hypocrisy. If you are in a relationship with God, if you're in a relationship with the community, then you don't have to be afraid of some tension. You need to speak to it. You need to say, I don't understand. You need to say, I'm at odds with this. You need to, and by the way, you need to listen. You don't just say to God, I don't understand what you're doing. Do what I want. You don't just say to your faith community, I don't like this. Change it. You say, I struggle with this, and let the community, someone in the community, talk back, have an exchange, and learn. Read the signs. You know what's going on. And trust yourself. That's where the fits in the next. And why do you not judge for yourselves what is right? I love that example. On your way before the, when you go with your accuser before the magistrate, on the way, try to settle the case. Like, talk to your accuser. Don't just wait for a final judgment. Don't make it a big deal if it doesn't have to be a big deal. You know, if you attend a church, let's use my church as an example. Excuse me, we don't have pews. We have chairs, right? We have chairs that interlock, and they're set up very pew much style. They're in rows, and the beauty of that is, of course, you can remove chairs, and so we try to make sure that, you know, whatever. The chairs are reset because we keep moving things around all the time. But whenever they're reset, there's always spaces in there for people who have walkers or wheelchairs, for people who just need a little more room or space for whatever reason. And so you try to make sure that happens. And every now and again, I have sort of, you know, arrived at church on a Sunday morning and realized there was a big thing last night. They've reset it and they forgot to leave spaces. Ah, I'm running around, I'm grabbing spaces. But I have noticed that we tend to put spaces on one side of the sanctuary more than on the other. So if you are somebody who had a walker, a wheelchair, a mobility scooter, I don't know, something you know, that would fit into that space, you come in and you go, well, there's always spaces on the east side, but there's never any spaces on the west side. But I really like sitting on the west side. I guess there's nothing for me at this church. And you walk away. You know, or you demand, I'm going to council and have this addressed. You can make a very big deal of it, in which case then people are, oh, now we're all a little bit awkward. Or you can go to somebody who's involved in the church and say, is there any way we could have chairs moved on the other side too? Because I actually would like sitting on the left side, on the west side. And discover, oh gosh, yeah, of course we can. You know, oh, that's, you know what? We should have done that. Nobody thought to explain. Yes, that's a mistake. Thank you. We'll fix that. There is a way to address a small issue before it becomes a big issue. I've had that issue discussed with the language we use around God, where someone has said, I can't believe that you will refer to God as the Father in a service. And then we'll talk about it. I said, well, yes, but you'll also hear God referred to his mother. You'll hear a variety of images. You'll hear, you know, and that's how we are as a community. We like to move through all of them as opposed to finding one that might be neutral. Because we don't think that God is neutral. So rather than thinking of God as having no gender, we think of God as being genderful. As opposed to thinking of God only as a parent, we also think of God as a child. And so we use different words, different images all the time. But because you're raising this to me, I'm realizing maybe we're not rotating through, you know, we're not bringing in enough images lately. And I really would appreciate you bringing that to my attention. I'm going to work. Now, I have learned something. You have learned something. You may not be satisfied with my answer. And you might still say, yeah, no, I can't. I can't be at a Jesus is Lord church. And I can respect that. But we've had that discussion. So you didn't go away angry at me. And I didn't go, and I wasn't left behind going like, why are you upset? What's going on? We had a chance to talk about it. And the majority of the time, once we talk about it and understand each other, it works out. And that, to me, is what we're hearing here. So this is pretty much wisdom that we're getting. But in that wisdom, I think, is also how we are meant to relate to God. The earlier images from yesterday, the day before, we heard, you know, this idea, we're looking at God as the master of the house, who beats the slaves, hard or light, depending on how faithful you are, or a thief in the night. And now I'm moving into this idea of relationship. And so I think that that's what we're encouraged to do, is to recognize that we have a relationship with God, and we have a relationship with our neighbors, and we have a relationship with our community, and we have a relationship with the people in our household, our children or our parents. And that tension is not a problem. Disagreement, differing perspectives is not a problem. In fact, it is a gift. Jesus wishes that fire was already burning so we could burn away some of that stuff that we don't need, which is we must conform. We must conform with each other. I must be exactly what my parents want me to be. I must be exactly what my church expects me to be. I must be exactly what the faith calls. No, I need to be me and figure out who I am in relationship to my parents and who I am in relationship to my children, and let us all affect each other, impact each other. That's relationship. I need to know that when I become part of a faith community, I bring my gifts and my gifts become part of that community. The community changes. And so we are in relationship. I need to know that God actually listens to me and is affected by me. Otherwise, my prayers are meaningless. But there is also no relationship if I'm not listening to God as well, which doesn't mean, so therefore it means that not everything is going to be my way. It's just I need to present what I'm feeling, what I'm thinking, and then I need to be able to listen to what others are thinking and feeling, and I need to hear, discern what God is saying in the midst of all of that. That's relationship. And that was just a sermon, so I'm going to stop right now. Oh, that was too much of a sermon. I'm sorry about that. I know I do that occasionally. So, you know what? I'm just going to leave it here. I'm going to leave it with you right now and simply offer a prayer and let you consider those words that Jesus is offering and see what's in them for you. So, let us pray. Loving God, thank you. Thank you for relationship. The relationship that we have with each other. The relationship that we have with you. God, thank you. Thank you for relationships that are healthy, that allow us to be ourselves, but also allow us to be open to the other, open to learning and growing, open to change. God, we thank you for this time together, and we ask that as we've heard your voice, we follow it, and that we continue to grow in faith. We pray in the name of your Son, Jesus Christ, through the Holy Spirit. Amen. That's it for today, I guess. But I look forward to seeing you tomorrow. Until I get to see you, God bless. So please know that God does see you. You are in a relationship with God. God sees you. God's love comes to you and meets you where you are, but it doesn't just stay there. It moves through you into the world, and it is part of all of your relationships, this love of God. And so you change the world just by being you. And you do it even more by doing it intentionally. So thank you for being you. God bless you, and see you tomorrow.